AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Ungodly hot, but I don't have to tell you that. Minneapolis, St. Paul, once again in an extraordinary stretch of heat right now. Sven Sundgaard, bringmeinthenews.com's weather guy extraordinaire. And, of course, if you're not following him on YouTube, you're wrong. He is kind enough to join us today to talk about, is this day 8 of the 90s we've had in early June?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
Day 8.
Wow. Did we break the record? Did we break the record today or no? We did not.
I'm sorry. Oh. I know everybody was hoping we'd hit 100, right? I mean, at this point, I'm kind of like, why not? You know, might as well make it even more historic and extreme. But no, yeah, the record is 99, set in 1956. It holds. We've been pretty steady at 97 since about 1:30, so for 4 hours. And we're really at that peak heating of the day. So at this point, even to go up another degree or two is pretty hard. So probably stand.
How many days in this 8-day stretch did we actually break the record or tie it?
So, yeah, well, we broke 9 different temperature records in the last 8 days. 3 high temperature records, which is impressive enough. But even more interesting and kind of frightening and very indicative of a greenhouse is 6 overnight lows that have been broken, meaning 6 overnights that have been the warmest on record. You know, because it is still early June. It should still cool off at night at this time of year. And we've had consistently, as anybody who doesn't have air conditioning for sure knows, where consistent nights that have stayed in the mid to upper 70s or even warmer. If you're in the downtown areas, you know, it's been staying near 80 degrees even at night. So, yeah, so several different records there, and as I mentioned, it's a sign of a warming world as far as the greenhouse effect, because the way the greenhouse effect works, it doesn't, you know, intensify or amplify the sun, but what happens is we're trapping in more heat, and that means during the night primarily.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another sign of that.
And that's, yeah, you're right. That is a little scary. We'll get back to the heat in a second, but I want to bring up your excellent YouTube video you put out today about those microbursts, because one of the things I found, and I love about your radar coverage of this, it almost just seems to appear out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, right over someplace in the metro area is this massive deluge that comes out of the sky, and you see waves that come off of it. I mean, it really is a remarkable weather phenomenon.
Yeah, you know, I think I find these kind of thunderstorms more fascinating, really, than typical severe weather, because severe weather is organized. It's, you know, we're used to that more. You know, cold front comes through, line of storms develop, a couple of them produce tornadoes or straight line winds. You know, and it's more or less textbook. You know, and when we get this hot, the air gets so stable, because to get a thunderstorm to form, you got to understand the basics of instability, which means the air has to be cooler, relatively speaking, as you go aloft, meaning relative in terms of if you bring air down from 10,000 feet, it's got to be cooler than the air that's at the surface.
Yes.
And the way our atmosphere works is, yes, it's almost always absolutely colder aloft, but 50 below zero at 30,000 feet up might surprise people that if you brought it all the way to the surface, it would be warmer than our temperatures in the 90s, just because as you compress air, anybody knows the bicycle tire pump, it heats up. And when you release the air expands, it cools. Long story short, it needs to be cool off. And we get into these days on end of heat. It builds through the middle of the atmosphere, and it's hard to get air to rise. You get these kind of shallow clouds to form. But to really get a cloud to keep rising and form a thunderstorm, you need something more. And what it's been the last couple of days is these wandering, very subtle boundaries, and it makes it more fun from a forecasting standpoint, because you have to try to find what are the subtle features that could push air upward just enough to bust the cap, so to speak, or get through that warm layer that it is really up about probably 2 miles up above us. And yesterday in the Twin Cities, it was very subtle, but you could see it on radar, and I did show this in my weather video today, that it was the old outflow boundaries from those thunderstorms Tuesday night in western Wisconsin. And, you know, that air keeps kind of moving around. When the winds are light like they've been the last couple of days, it's been remarkable at the surface and aloft. There's not a lot of wind. So those boundaries, that leftover air from thunderstorms just kind of wanders around, and if it collides with another one of those, it just happens to be that downtown Minneapolis was the spot yesterday, and then you could watch those outflows just continue moving outward, and then it collided with one that was in from western Minnesota and produced a storm around the Zimmerman Elk River area a little later in the evening.
And if you haven't seen the video of the Target field crew trying to frantically get the tarp out there, I mean, it came down, and it comes down with wind, it comes down with force, and then you actually see that concussion wave almost that comes off the storm on the radar, where it's just there's so much force coming down. I'm glad that doesn't happen too often, because it is a little scary how much force and power comes out of the sky down on us.
Yeah, you know, and these microbursts are really hard to predict, because you don't know which storm is going to do that or not. Mm-hmm. And it's very brief when it does do that. It's the initial impact really that causes that. And then it, you know, spreads out, and just like any wave, as it spreads out, it gets weaker. And, you know, on the ground, of course, friction and everything else is going to slow it down dramatically. But it's all about, you know, and again, I explain this, I know we say this all the time, but go back and watch my weather video, because I really explain it. And visually, part of the other thing we had the last couple of days is we've been mixing up the atmosphere, you know, convection, like your convective oven, in really deep layers, so that the base of these clouds are a mile and a half up. And that's a lot of space of dry air that when the rain starts to fall, it's cooling the air and it's plummeting from a mile and a half instead of, you know, think of those. Remember, we were talking a couple of weeks ago about those bizarre weak tornadoes, because the height of the cloud base were only a few hundred feet.
Yeah.
You know, so now we're talking about 7,500 feet. There's just more room for the air to accelerate downward. And I just happened to be, I was waiting to bike to the gym until the storm passed. And as I'm driving through Loring Park, I could actually find by chance the impact of that microburst yesterday, or one of them, because you could see two trees where the tops of the branches were pushed down, because it's like a garden hose when it comes down from the storm. And then it spreads out as it hits the ground. And that's where it knocked down a bunch of branches. But the tops of two specific trees were all kind of flattened and bent from that initial impact from the air. And it was just really fascinating to see. And that just spread out. You know, Target Field, as the crow flies, is not very far from there, or downtown itself. And that's what everybody thought.
I brought up the story earlier. Here's another scary sign. It's early June. We had a story out of Lake Johanna over in Ramsey County. They get swimmer's itch over there. We have started to see these bacterial problems in their lakes, and it's coming earlier and earlier. And the fact that we're already having these, it's not June 15th. Usually the water's barely warm enough to get in it as it is. Now we've got these issues. That's another bad sign with this heat.
Yeah, that is a scary thing to watch. And as you mentioned, regardless of what the rest of the summer does, the lakes, once they're warm, they're warm. You know, they're not going to cool off dramatically enough. And so you have the toxic algae blooms that will start to develop. You know, whereas in a normal summer, we start to hear about those in August. And you say, hey, well, be careful if you walk your dog. Don't let them go into the water if you see that weird bluish-green film on the water. We're going to be probably seeing that a whole month at least earlier than we might. And that means a long summer of, you know, having to be careful with your dogs and your kids about where they can go in. And yeah, it just, and warmer water too holds less oxygen. There was a study out recently, and I know for sure WCCO covered it because I had reposted this article, but that talked about how, you know, we know that the oceans are warming, lakes are warming. Well, warmer water holds less oxygen, and it turns out that for some reason, they don't really know why, lakes like Minnesota's are losing oxygen quicker than the oceans are. So we know that both are warming up a lot in a warmer world, but for some reason, it's kind of a mystery, the lakes are losing oxygen quicker, and that has impact, as we've talked about before, on everything in our lakes that we love, walleye and the entire ecosystem and food chain. And in a particularly hot summer like this, only accelerates that process and pushes things to a brink. You know, walleye is a cold water species.
Yeah.
They do not like warm, gross, swampy water. That's why you don't find them in Alabama.
Alan, there's other reasons too. We'll get away from that. The other thing that's just scary, and I'm as a homeowner, I got my yard. My yard looks like it's early September. I mean, it's already crispy. Yeah. It really is remarkable how dry this stretch has been.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people are drawing comparisons to 87 and 88. And for any of us who can remember that, I mean, I was a kid. But one of the memories I have is my dad in vain trying to water trees in our yard, adult trees, not little ones, because he didn't even bother at that point that year. And I can remember walking on the grass, and it was like, you know, frosted flakes or something because it was so crispy. You know, the grass was totally dead. And I remember leaves falling off of trees, adult trees that summer, because things had gotten so dry and so stressed. And you got to remember that a tree in Minnesota has a short season to make food. You know what, 4 or 5 months, or four really. And so for a tree to make the decision, we need to ditch the leaves. That tells you how stressed and desperate it is, because that's what, like us saying, I'm going to skip meals. It's too hot for me to eat, so I'm just going to skip eating today. That's basically what the tree's saying for that year. And the one difference we can draw to that insane time is that we went into that summer dry. May was already extreme drought conditions, and luckily we're going into this with pretty normal rainfall year to date. But as you can see in your own yard, when it's this hot and this sunny, and it hasn't been that humid this go around, we had a 70 degree dew point for part of the day yesterday, but mostly the air has been drier. And while it's kind of sticky, dew points in the 60s, when temperatures in the 90s, the relative humidity is low. So we're evaporating a lot, and it's the strongest sun of the year. It's June. So yeah, things dry out very quickly, especially in those top few inches of soil. So we're really in need for rain already. And the rain tomorrow is not a guarantee for everybody. It's going to be hit and miss. If you're lucky, you know, like some of us have been with the downpours the last couple of days, you're lucky to get a quick half inch, but your neighbor 5 miles away gets nothing.
And I want to get back to the temperatures here. Sven Sundgaard joining us, of course. He's nice enough to take some time on a Thursday with us. Today, of course, we got up there, 97. Where's my jacket? Tomorrow is an interesting day because the forecasts have kind of gone back and forth. Will it hit 90 or not tomorrow? Do you know?
I think it will. Now, part of it does have to do with the timing of when we do see any of these thunderstorms around. But I think I've talked about it before, I developed a computer model in college, a thermodynamic model for forecasting temperatures. It's not as fancy as it sounds, but basically you put in the amount of heat into weather balloon data or forecast, you know, upper level data, and then you get a certain output. And the reason I created that was so that I can tinker with, well, what if we get this much sun or that much sun, or what if we have fresh snow or old snow, to see, you know, what is the quantitative impact on the temperatures. And I ran my model for tomorrow, and even if we get 15% of possible sunshine tomorrow, we hit 90, which tells you just how warm the air mass is. It won't take much to hit 90 tomorrow. So it's more a matter of timing. If the storms come through right at noon and we have an hour or two of clouds and showers, well, then that would probably be our best bet of preventing 90, because then you got to play catch up. But I think those storms are going to be few and far enough between, and probably maybe not till after 2 o'clock, so that we'll probably get there. And yeah, that'll be day 9, and that will then tie us for the third longest stretch of 90s. Mm-hmm. And most of the other ones, all of the other ones, in fact, were in July, or started at the end of June and went into July. So that's the thing about this heat wave, is that so early. We've never had a heat wave this long this early, and now we're going to be in competition if we get past tomorrow with heat waves that we're talking about in the 80s and 30s. 14 is the longest consecutive stretch. And if we do hit 90 still on Saturday and Tuesday next week, which are the only 2 days which are possible that we might not hit 90, then we're in competition for that. And I don't think it's out of the question at all. So those are the days to watch. If we squeak by a 90 on Saturday, we're really in the running for some insane heat.
And so early, God, that I've enjoyed
a month early. Yeah.
I've enjoyed your Twitter feed, because you've been like, this is so extraordinary to have this level of heat for so long this early. It is scary, and I agree with you. The city's been warming up here. I just don't know how it's not going to hit 90 the next few days.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing, is we've been the actual temperatures have been outperforming the computer models. So when I'm looking at the computer models, whether it's mine or the models that all meteorologists use to look at, we've been outperforming them by 1, 2, 3 degrees. And the consensus in the models is 88 on Saturday, for example. Well, if we've been 2 degrees warmer than the model average every day, that gives you 90. Now, it probably will be close Saturday. We might be waiting until 5 p.m., whereas this week we're 90 by 11 a.m., but yeah, if we do it Saturday, there's no reason to think we couldn't just keep going. All we got to do is get to Wednesday next week. If we keep hitting 90 consecutively to Wednesday, we tie for the most ever. which is extraordinary because that was 1936. That is off the charts hot. Remains our hottest summer by far ever. You know, there were several hundreds in that streak. So to be in competition with that is really extraordinary.
One last thing. I've looked at the extended forecast. How extraordinary is it?
Oh, don't do that.
Well, but here's the deal. I've looked at some of the numbers that are coming down the line, and one of the things that really it is scary is that every high forecast is either high 80s or 90, low 90s for the next few weeks. That's also got to be a really bad sign.
Yeah, so that's when we're going to start to – and the other thing is the lack of rain. Yeah. Because what happens in this sort of heat bubble like this is it just builds on itself and becomes a runaway system where, like I said, it's just the air mass becomes so stable because while we cool off at night in the lower atmosphere, you know, we cool off from the ground up, the heat stays aloft. And then we just keep adding to that each day so that that cap or that inversion of warm air aloft grows and it's harder and harder to push beyond it. And that's what happened in the summer of 1988, for example, and several summers of the 1930s, is that bubble just grows and you just can't get out of it unless there's a significant pattern change. I don't see really, the model, the American model has occasionally in days 14, 15, 16 of its runs tried to throw us some 70 degree days, but it's highly inaccurate at that point. And then the next model run will be back into the 90s. So, yeah, I wouldn't look for any relief. And remind people, too, that the official forecast from NOAA this summer is a hot and dry summer for the Midwest. And, you know, here we go. The first part of it sure doesn't disagree with that.
Well, the only person you should trust with weather is Sven Sundgarden. I'm dead serious. The guy is fantastic. I'll post out that microburst video that you put out earlier. I'll also make sure I link to everything. We'll spotlight this interview. Sven, thank you very much. Try to stay cool, my friend.
Yeah, and just to say, tomorrow my weather video, today I concentrated on the microbursts and some of the latest heat stats. Tomorrow I am going to dive more into how dry we are in comparison to 1988 for those that are curious.
And I'll make sure we get that video posted as well for everyone out there. Sven Sundgarden, bringmethenews.com. Sven, take care. Thank you very much. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.